G'day and welcome to the Farms Buyers Podcast, where we talk everything agribusiness. This is the Harvest Series, brought to you by the leaders, innovators of Australian agriculture, from growers, lawyers, accountants, contractors, and now even ag tech companies on the show today. I hope you can use techniques and technologies talked about on the show to implement them into your next year's harvest, or even take it away as a bit of motivation for you. Tell the crew and your boss to listen in to improve your yield, simplify your operation, or even save you time picking or driving the tractor, chasing down that header. Now this episode, we head over to the world of ag tech with Doug Fitch from AgWorld, the farm management platform for farmers in Australia and across the globe. If you've gotten something out of this series so far, please help the podcast by sharing it with your mates so that we can grow and reach every other farmer across Australia. That's the plan. I'm a farmer too, and doing this on the side, so it'd be a huge help if you could share it across as well. Right, let's get into it. Doug, beautiful to have you on today.
Yeah, no, thanks for the opportunity. Always good to connect with people, and look forward to having a talk.
Absolutely, innovative agribusinesses is the core of what I'm trying to push, so that farms and farmers across Australia can become more efficient and productive with the time they use, if that's scaling out or even optimizing what they've got currently. So before we get down to agribusiness and what AgWorld's all about, can you give us a bit of a background of who you are and where you've come from and how it's landed you in your position today?
Yeah, look, I guess without going too far back, I started out as an apprentice mechanic actually a long time ago, but I've always had a passion for farming, and yep. Always wanted to, and I've spent a lot of time as a kid up and around Muckinbootin and in Western Australia, and then I ended up sort of marrying into a farming family and ended up acquiring that family farm and working in retail, doing sales agronomy and that type of stuff over time.
Yep.
So where I haven't been able to farm, I've always worked in the farming community, which is a fantastic community of people to work in, and you're working with nature and growing stuff, and that's just a lot of fun with a lot of variables with a lot of great people. So that's probably me in short.
Yeah, beautiful. It's a bit of a role reverse of you going into the in-laws and then you're both taking over the family farm. Bit of a switch up in what the normal is.
Yeah, a little bit different. They're moving to retirement, I guess, and deciding with decisions by family members not to continue. So we acquired that, and then I leased that to my brother-in-law, and it still remains in the family and farming through that. So that works real well for everybody, actually.
Yeah, great stuff. So you've come from mechanic and now you're head of CEO of AgWorld. Can you talk to us a bit about your role within AgWorld currently and how far the company has come since it first started?
Yeah, so we started back in 2008 with the idea with myself, Chris Ramsey and Matthew Powell. Chris was a consultant in cotton and worked with me in one of the multinationals, and Matt was a computer scientist that I knew, and we got together on the back of Chris seeing that there was a need for centralizing information in one location for consultants to be able to give the best advice to growers, because they provide an integral service to the farmer. And from my side, I just saw the struggle of succession planning in the family farm and scalability, and sort of just seeing that it could be way more efficient than spreadsheets or pen and paper, which is kind of like the thing that prevents you from scaling. And the margins are limited, and we have the best farmers in the world, you know, in Australia, in a lot of ways from an innovation out of necessity. And so we decided to build this centralized system, and it kind of grew from there, and it was really just working directly with growers and consultants either in retail or private consultants, on what are the issues that need to be solved, and then really listening and delivering again solutions that would take people forward into the future. And we've focused very much on, you know, the planning of crop production, and then understanding how did that actually go, you know, what actually happened, and then actually how do we improve that. And you used the word optimizing before.
Yep.
I think as you scale a farm, you have to work out and you have to know what is optimal for the season, in the season you have. And farmers are generally very good at doing that by eye, but there's also an emotion tied to, that's one of my best paddocks, I know what that can do. And you're kind of like, how do we bring some data around that makes it a sure bet, or helps de-risk, or helps them sleep at night, and takes the stress and worry out of it? And how do you hand over 30 years of experience to a guy out of uni that's got two seasons under his belt to a multi-million dollar asset without any information, you know? So it's a bit of the transition, and giving the young guys coming in, or young girls coming in that are running farms, the information they need. And they're pretty, you know, astute on information, but seasons take time, and you don't have a lot of room for error. So
absolutely,
that's really where we kicked off with AgWorld, and it's taken us nationally and then internationally to the US and Canada and New Zealand and South Africa. And so it's been a good journey to look at those markets, see what they do over there, see what we do here, and bring some back here and take some over there.
Looking at the different markets, do you see from the way they interact with your platform, how they change from country to country, from Canada to US or to Australia?
Yeah, look, it's very different here. A simple difference is, you know, most farmers here own all their own equipment, do all their own work, right down to, you know, fixing machines. In the US, for example, there's a lot of areas where the farmer may do the seeding, but they don't do the spraying, they don't do the spreading, and they don't necessarily do the harvest. Because, you know, there are people that provide all those services. So that's a very different business model.
Yep.
It's not a right or wrong, but it's a very different business model to what we have here. And that there means that they use our platform differently, completely, because they're having third parties collaborate on our platform, whereas they do that in Australia, but nowhere near to that extent.
Yeah, okay. So it's a little bit different there. But for farm planning, I've seen like optimizing of our land currently with land prices through the roof. I think a lot of farmers, if they're not buying, they're going to have to look to optimize their own farm to become more efficient and productive. So for farm planning, why is it so important in today's world for the farmer to get on top of the books, convert it from pen to paper and into more than what a spreadsheet can handle?
I think the thing is in ag world, we've taken the approach that a farmer doesn't grow a crop solely on his own. He has inputs from many different service providers. And that's not, I'm talking financial and insurance. And so all of those people have a bit of information about the business and a bit of expertise. If you can bring that data to one spot, and make your decisions data-driven by creating a plan, by having the actuals in there then of what you did, and people affirming, for example, that that's done, that addresses a whole lot of new issues that are coming to the market around compliance and natural capital management and you know, are you mining your property, you know, your soils, or are you building them up? And you can't just guess with that, you know, with carbon and all these other things coming and measures that are all, you know, the grower is the compression point of that. And without data to defend your position, to say, actually, I've improved my soil. Actually, I use this practice and this is how I do it and this is the results I get. We know farmers that care about their soil and their asset. But that's not always the perceived view of many that are outside the industry, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're often, you know, people think farmers are environmental terrorists. They're not. They actually look after the land. They're great stewards of the land. And so planning is the first piece. Executing, being able to plan, then measure, and then improve is how we've built the platform. And that is why the planning is so important. And if you talk about optimizing, in the US, farmers will get subsidies, for example, a lot more than what we do here. And they have certainly a greater margin. So they can afford to have errors effectively, whereas we have such narrow margins here and we have such harsh conditions. You know, we're not largely not irrigated. We are low rainfall by comparison, and we've got sandier soils, right? So we've got to deal with the data that points to the things that we can control and can influence over a longer period of time. And that's why people should be planning and using that a platform like AgWorld to manage that data and actually look at it and interrogate it with the specialists and experts around your business.
Yeah, well, the way I see it is if you don't have your data working for you, you can't actually initiate that next step into measuring your carbon and getting paid for it. Have you seen clients as they started to use that data and then they can actually take that, be compliant, and also take it to the next level of getting paid for their carbon, for carbon credits?
Well, look, I think a good example is with canola. You know, as an example, to Europe with the biodiesel production and the, you know, international sustainability and carbon certification, the ISCC, requires canola to meet a certain criteria. And unless you have that data on hand, and you can have it in on pen and paper, but if you can just have it at the push of a button when you're audited and you can show, yep, I complied, here's the data that's been validated by my agronomist and myself in the production of this. So it's validated data by a community of people that grew it. That carries a lot more weight than sitting there and just handing a piece of paper that you wrote down at the last bit and then signing a stat deck, right? So I think that's a great example of compliance, driving, you know, going with product and adding value to product. But in AgWorld, you're doing that in your daily process. It's doing it for you. So I think, you know, using your data like that the canola is a good example, really.
Yeah, it sort of acts as a live platform running with the data that you've entered into the system. AgWorld, what sort of farmers are using it and who can most get the benefits out of it?
I guess for AgWorld, it doesn't really matter about crop size and type.
Yep.
It's probably because we support over 200 different crops. I think any farmer that wants to measure their risk, because that's one thing you can control, right? We're not always in the position where we can't control commodity prices, for example. So any that wants to measure their risk and or have a turnkey solutions towards compliance as well. Any farmer that wants to run their business and get out of it financial, agronomic, and environmental data into one spot that helps prove that you're doing things sustainably for the questions that we're being asked now as growers and questions that we're going to be asked in the future that we haven't had asked yet. That's where you want to build your repository of information. And I think that's, if you can do that within your daily process, so it's not another step, because no one wants to do another extra thing. That's kind of the key. And they're the types of farmers that are using it.
Yeah, right. So for growers using AgWorld, is it in their pocket they're using it day to day, or how do they mostly utilize the product?
I think largely the interaction begins with the agronomist, and probably I would say, particularly in Australia, it's up around 90% of the farmers that are in AgWorld have one or two agronomists connected to them. So the whole conversation about what am I going to do and what's my production cycle and plan over the next 4 or 5 years, and how is that a sustainable process? It begins with the agronomist. So that agronomist is interacting, and then farmers are getting alerts, and they've got their paddock maps and so forth, and they get alerts to say, oh, this job needs doing, or have you done this job? Or the agronomist gets alert, yeah, I have done that job. Or they've had the call where the farmer says, oh, I'm not going to be there. Can you come out and have a look? The agronomist knows exactly which paddock, he knows what jobs were done last. He knows what needs to be done next because he's got the plan at hand. So it's kind of that collaborative back and forth that normally happened just over phone, but now it's phone and with some information, right? And it can happen in the absence. And funny enough, when the COVID pandemic was on and there was this whole social distancing thing, which none of us have ever experienced before, and you weren't allowed in paddock, you know, with your farmer, AgriWorld came to the forefront because it was digital tech that was enabling people to go out and just do it and then have the phone conversation. So it was good from that perspective.
Yeah, it's pretty good to be able to access it in that way, so you don't need that face-to-face value for it, but also like the time saved that you don't need to be talking with your agronomist every day leading up to harvest is pretty good money saved as well for that.
Yeah, it is. And you know, the price of a subscription or whatever for the ag world, you know, I always say, when's the last time you made a $2,000 mistake or a $3,000 or $4,000 mistake? I mean, if we're all honest, you make much bigger mistakes than that if you're going to make one. What we try and do, you know, with AgriWorld, by having that information on hand, is make sure that everybody knows what should be going on. And, you know, you don't miss a paddock being sprayed. You don't spray the wrong paddock. You don't fertilize the wrong paddock. You put on the right rate. They're all really expensive events if you don't get it right, right? So we've got lots of examples where people have, through that collaborative event, being able to program, being able to see where each other at, and money has been saved. So it's more than just efficiency and so forth.
Yeah, that's it. I find like with a lot of ag tech, there's the value of purchasing the product and entering in your data and getting that information out, but the outside value of saving the time that it takes to talk to you agronomist, or even saving the cost of misfertilizing one paddock and changing that variable in there, can really help you out in the long run. Over like farming is a long-term thing, so we need to think long-term. And if we can save 2% of cost each year, that's a lot in our one person's generation, isn't it?
It is. It's a huge saving. And I like that point. Is like, you don't go broke in 1 year. Right.
Yeah.
It began a long time ago. It's just that's the year, but you want to, no one wants that to happen. So you want to have that generational view and that plan that is sustainable over time. And I just think farming was just families doing a farm. Now it's families in a family business, which is called the farm. Right. There's a different change now. And I think they're not trivial. That's not a trivial thing. These are multi-million dollar assets with lean margins, and we are good at it, and we're going to get better at it. So,
yeah, that's it. And if we can take a little bit of the emotion out of it and get some data-backed info to support our ideas and whether or not this is a good idea or that's a bad idea, that can't be a bad thing as a farmer moving forward. But for AgWorld, since 2008, what sort of challenges have you had, not necessarily just with the product, but the outside sort of challenges of moving the product overseas or even domestically here in Australia?
Oh, I think the first thing is, you know, pen and paper and the fact that there was no real pressing need for something like an ag world at the time.
Yeah.
And that we had to educate the market. And I guess to use the analogy, we swam a long way offshore and there wasn't that many people that wanted to swim out to where we were, even though we were waving saying it's okay. So people like to experience it. And so you have this early adopter cycle, and that early adopter cycle really has formed and helped us form the product. But the next challenge is how do you get that next crowd behind it? And it takes a lot of other industry change, and we've seen that. And that group is now following in behind the early adopters. It's a bigger group because they know it's gone from, I know one day I'll need software, but I'm hoping I retire before that happens, to my son's come home or my daughter's come home and I need to provide some platform for them to take over. And we've also seen products like John Deere become, people are tending to look at, okay, we want to know what the yield monitor is doing. It used to just hang there, and no one really bothered with it. But we want to know what that's doing. We want to know what our machines are doing. So you're tending to see John Deere have done pretty well, I guess, in making a real connected network. They've got a ways to go, but they're doing pretty well and leading the way. And you're starting to see people make decisions on what machines they buy by the connectivity of the monitors, which is obviously the play, and a bit less mixed fleet. So those sort of things in getting adoption have been a challenge. And then when you go overseas, it's you have to have a local team. You can't have Australians selling to Americans. You got to have Americans selling to Americans or Canadians to Canadians. And
did you learn that the hard way?
Yeah, we tried. And quite honestly, they didn't understand me. So it's pointless. It's just very different culturally. So we put our own local teams in, and then you have to localize the product. And then you have to, as I said, they work their farms differently. That's not badly, they're just very different. So how do you bring our innovation, and they look at you strangely and say, why is that important? We've got plenty of margin, so it doesn't really matter,
Yeah.
And then now their margins are coming back, their subsidies are less, they're using the planning tool more with their agronomist, and it's become a real thing. So they're kind of the changes, and it's always about how adoption is we call it the long, slow ramp of death in terms of SaaS technology. It takes a long time for people to come on board and get the momentum, and that's why you see a lot of ag tech companies fail, because they couldn't get that adoption. And it's not because they didn't try, they just couldn't get it, or they weren't solving a problem that was as important. Autosteer took off real quick, didn't it? Really, yeah. Comparatively, because it transferred straight to the bottom line. You could see the efficiencies in it, and it's kind of like a no-brainer.
And straight lines look a lot better than a worm going up the paddock.
Absolutely. And we used to think initially, before that really took off, that, well, farmers won't talk to us during seeding time because they're busy driving the thing. Well, now they're on their iPads and they're ringing us, talking to us about stuff they want to do and rah, rah, rah. So they're the sort of changes you see, but we've seen them over a decade and we've spent over $50 million, to get there. So this is the challenge with ag tech, and people get fatigued. They get tech fatigue, just like we got machine fatigue back in the early days, because they kept breaking down and we had to keep wondering why they engineered them so badly in our view. And now they're pretty good, So we're in the tech fatigue stage and coming perhaps out of that a little bit in ag tech.
For this podcast, I'm trying to get people like adapt and adopt as a bit of a phrase I like to throw around every now and then, to try get these farmers, the early adopters are always going to be the early adopters, but the guys that probably don't listen to the podcast, that this podcast should be shared with, is also probably who we want to be hitting as well. Those that are a bit complacent with what they're doing, or they're just looking for a bit of a spur up the bum to see how they can improve their farm. And it's just that little proof in the pudding that they probably need to get them ticking along and thinking, this is a pretty good idea. It would save me 20, 30 grand, even 100 grand a year. Or even if it saves you a couple of grand, I think you're better off than not using or implementing something. But starting off lightly is probably the best for farmers initially in that early adoption phase. How have you educated farmers around, 2008, moving from there, what sort of education did farmers need to get going onto the platform, or you just see the benefits of what AgWorld and other products like it could do?
I think we took an education. So what is cloud? Was the first thing. I don't back in 2008, and then what the hell is an iPad? Yeah, that's 2010. And how come this thing doesn't work online and offline? So they're problems that we had to solve, and we actually made an online offline app. We had to educate them on that. But then you had, you know, there's this thing that, like with AutoSteer, you could point to immediate value, but it did mean that you had to think about changing your processes on your farm and the way, and your machines and the whole range of things over time. And I think we faced that with Ag World, where people have, and particularly with software, because you can't touch it per se. You can touch the iPad, but you can't, not like a tractor, right? Or a header. So you know, that traditional way of thinking about things had to change. And I think educating people on efficient process and optimization, and how, you know, one data point is not that great. Two data points is not bad, but three you can make a curve out of, right? And you can work out whether it's going up or down. And as soon as a lot of people started getting 3 years of data, they were sharing it with their neighbors and saying, actually, I can actually see where I can do this better. Yeah, right. Or I noticed by using AgWorld on my records, I could see that there was a who seeded the paddock on the shift this was on a large operation for sure, who was actually seeding that paddock, and they weren't locking the air seeder box down properly on one side. So it was actually missing rows, right?
Yep.
And they were able to pick that up and track that back. Now, that would have cost them a lot more money, you know, a lot of money over the size program, but that's the sort of value. So there's a whole range of different things that people saw. But I think it's also, like I said earlier, it's having that information to hand to the next generation. And we've seen digitized farm records sell for around 50 to 70 grand with a farm, right? Because they've got them. And there was some recent big sales of farms around the place where digital records went with them, and the buyers wanted those digital records because they want to be able to analyze and interrogate the data. So that those sorts of things have added to the value. And then over the top of what we've been doing, we've got Facebook, Twitter, all these big tech companies familiarizing people, getting them on their smartphones and whatever, and people are interacting. And so it's got a board. It hasn't been an age thing, because that's actually, you know, grandparents and older people are on Facebook, you know, and whether their kids like that or not. And so that's kind of, those companies have kind of helped people get into the tech space, but our job has been education. And then you have to have proof of putting how data helps. And that's why the space we're in is a harder slog than a machinery space, as a for example.
Harder, but the value within it and the underlying value is there. And the longer you record your data and how you work with it, the better off you'll be in the long run. That farm, like, farms are going for whopping money at the moment, and people probably want to know a bit more about it. And say a farm has been using the platform for 10 years, how does that actually come up in the sale of a property? If you've witnessed anything, like, they just pass over the information, the data points.
So the actual process would be that on the sale of the farm, the owner would be writing to us to transfer those records across.
Yeah,
and we have the tools to transfer that to the new entity upon signing over. It's up to them to negotiate that between themselves, but we just need the formal permission and paperwork filled out to transfer that across within the system, which it doesn't take as long to do. I think the value is, you know, you're talking about carbon and compliance and things like that. I think 10 years of data gives you a real good baseline of how you've improved your property and what your yields were and your gross margins were by crop, by area of paddock, year over year, and what the farm has generated over the years, and why. People want to know the why when they buy things, and here's the why. These are all the things we did, you know. And I think, again, being validated by the agronomist and others that are on the farm that say, yeah, we did do that, it makes the data more valuable rather than me just typing in a spreadsheet what I said I did, you know. So I think that's where the farm record value is. And when you go to lease land, you know, if I was leasing, well, I leased mine to my brother-in-law. I've got all the records for the last 10 years of everything he's done to the place, right? That I have a copy of. And if I decided to buy another farm, I would want to see as many records as I could. And because I want to understand not just my guess of what the soil type's capability of is in that region or area. I might have a clue, but there may be some other deficiencies there that I haven't picked up. So I want to see how it's been farmed, what the system is. And carbon's going to, the reason farmers are running from carbon in some ways, you know, some are running toward it, some are running away, is because it needs to be driven from economics, not from environmental alone. It can't shut down the farm. And so the best thing farmers can do is have good digital information to show how they are great stewards of their land.
Yeah, right. That's a pretty interesting topic, probably worth another episode just for it. Yep. To see how you can probably work with, and even the lease, we did an episode buy or lease with Charlie Bloomfield, and that episode really took off. So if you could bolster that with the data of, should I lease that block? Yeah, they've got some great figures behind that, and that soil is really doing some stuff. That could really fly probably a lot with my generation looking to see if this is worthwhile. Is it viable? In terms of down the road, they don't really have anything going on, or they haven't really operated their system as well for me to benefit now.
Yep.
So I think that's, definitely an interesting space to see where it's going to go. And for you yourself, it's probably still in the growth phase of it, and you probably won't see the full potential within 5 or 10 years or so. Do you think that's still the case of these early adopters are still there, and then the mass market will sort of move in to farmers?
We sold to Semios because we believe that the technologies between our companies will help farmers further around managing risk. So there's a whole new market, not just of carbon, but derivatives for protecting itself on downside. Everybody's had a go at various insurance around derivatives. I think, with mesh networks and sensor data combined with all the info that's within AgWorld, I think we can build out those products to be understood better by all the parties that are wanting to either provide the service or participating in that service with the grower, and that growers can get the prices down that are relevant to their farming practice and field and or paddock and their local area, including sensors around frost. Right, we know frost. You can't control it yet, maybe, but you can understand. You can certainly understand if you understood at what level that frost was there for that period of time, how much damage it did against the dates you were sowing and all that. Maybe there's some other risk management strategies we can put outside of where you just get completely wiped out. But, there's a whole lot of data around that can be brought in, a lot of models that take the guesswork out, and derivatives could be used around that. So we think there's an exciting future around using this. And so I think those type of things where it ensures risk and has a direct bang for buck on the bottom line will bring people toward adoption. But you need money to do it as a business. And so we're back to our Semios, and I think that's a really exciting future.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, your last 13 years has been pretty exciting, and to see the business come to where it is for both US, Canada and Australia. Where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years, or even 25 years, the way they measure their carbon offsets?
Me, where do I see myself in 25 years? Or
yourself industry? And the business. Where do you see it going? And the business.
In 25 years, I'll probably be in a nursing home because I'm probably older than I look. I think in the next 5 to 10 years in particular, I do see that the adoption of data around the derivative market will grow. I do think that the overall adoption of tech will increase. I think the farm scale and size issue will continue to wrestle with how big do we have to be. The land price is out of control. We can't extend. We've got to find a way forward as mid-tier farmers and that to actually stay in the game. Will corporate large-scale farms continue out of superannuation funds? They have continued for a lot longer this time than they did in the 80s and the 90s. But will that change going into the 2030 time? I don't know. So, for me, I'm going to keep in doing what I'm doing. I'm passionate about agriculture. Like I said, I love working with farming families and I love growing crops. So that's not going to change. I just want to try and solve the risk, and I want to try and solve and try and find ways to be more in control of the rewards that we reap on the commodity side as well. There's some games to be played in that, I think, and that's probably another chapter, but there's guys like Clear Grain that are doing a fantastic job out there. You know, they're a great company worth getting on here about what they do. Nathan would be good to speak to on that if you haven't. Yep. But they're the sort of companies that I think can change the game for farmers, actually.
Yeah, well, that's what we're looking to get onto the podcast, those agribusinesses that are changing the game, and also the farmers that are changing the way that they use their soil to grow either livestock, cropping, horticulture, or whichever way it's going. But today, mate, thanks for coming onto the podcast and sharing your expertise, and great to see a little bit of insight into Ag World and how it operates. Great to see how far it's come.
Yeah, it'd be good. Look, if you're looking for other ones, getting Michael Gilbert from Semios would be really interesting as a data science and he's got a PhD in some sort of ag back space. And I think it's worth, you know, having a listen to the tech that they're seeing out of Canada well, and what they're bringing. Because these are all the things that are kind of going to take us forward as an industry. And what I love about Australia, mate, is we're good at what we do, and but we're not content with that. We're going to get better. So that's the exciting bit. So
that's it. Constantly improving. So before you go, you already took my question of who else would you like to hear on the Farm Slice podcast and why, but if you have another one, feel free.
Laconic is another one.
I had Darren Hughes on. He was unreal.
Yep, really good. Precision cropping technology are great as well. And then out of Kununurra, which is the new frontier, you know, which people, you know, it's an amazing place up there, small, but, you know, Fritz Bolton would be a good guy to talk to about cotton. That's been growing up there. Pretty interesting, just what are the challenges they're having? What are they doing? What's the innovation and thoughts they've got around technology? Because that's kind of a new frontier in our space.
Yeah, absolutely. Different environment and got to do different things to keep that up. But for anyone wanting to get in touch with you, Doug, yourself, or even just check out what Ag World is, how can we do that?
Best, we've got the at Ag World on Twitter and LinkedIn. So you can communicate with us that way. Website is www.agworld.com. So that's the best way. My details are within there to reach out to either via the website and via our marketing crew. And I'm always happy to talk direct with growers and anyone in the industry about their thoughts about the challenge, what we're doing, because we need it to be challenged. You know? That's a good bit. You know?
Challenging the process. So, yep. No worries, mate. Thanks for coming on the show. We'll speak very soon, I'm sure. Thanks for listening to episode 6 of the Harvest Series, and for Doug for coming on and sharing his time with us to go through experiences and his platform, Ag World. If you got something out of today's episode, please help by sharing it or even give it a cheeky 5-star review on Apple Podcasts to help us get a better yield for this podcast harvest each week. Until Friday, the next harvest episode, keep on farming.